Ahoy hoy, everybody. This is Bob Mackey with Laser Time Simpsons Podcast, Talking Simpsons, where we go over every episode in a semi-chronological way every
Indeed.
Week. And,
I can't believe I almost forgot to play that.
I almost talked over my own. That's the only reason I'm here, is to hear that sound clip, by the way. But today we're going to be talking about Krusty Gets Busted, and I'm going to throw it over to Chris, who can tell us when this episode aired and what was going on in the crazy world of 1990.
Aha, yes.
No, I'm also here, Henry Gilbert.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, Henry's here.
That's right, Krusty Gets Busted. This episode premiered on April 22nd, 1990. And to give you some context, this week in Simpsons history, the first ever WCW game is released for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Wings, a little television show, but a scrappy Nantucket airport debuts.
What?
And the Humpty Dance sits atop the rap charts, which is, I can't believe is a thing.
Do we need to explain Wings to the kids?
I don't think so.
Tonight on Wings. Yeah, who cares?
We hate to interrupt. Wings, and Wings.
What do you guys?
That's a Duckman joke, and thank you, Chris, because, man, we can't bag enough on Wings.
I thought it was hysterical.
Is anybody... Okay, that's where the actor from Monk first appeared, and where...
and Thomas Hayden Church.
In the Sandman. Mm-hmm. So your favorite actors, and I know Tim Daly does stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I forget who that is.
He's the voice
of
Superman.
Boring brother. He's the boring brother.
So welcome back to Wingman. You're only Wings podcast.
God, no! We can't do this!
If this gets popular enough, we should do Wingman.
This is Krusty Gets Busted. Probably one of the few Simpsons episodes with canonical results, I would say.
Yeah, I think changed so. The canon.
Mm-hmm. And this is the one episode. Is this the one episode directed by Brad Bird? Just the
first
he only
season
did one
of the one episode solely directed by Brad
That's
Bird.
What I thought,
he has a co-directing credit on the Krusty Father episode.
Got it. Okay.
I think this is the best episode of this first season.
Yeah,
and also though I would say, them getting Santa's Little Helper was a big, canon change too, though it was the first episode, so.
Sure.
Maybe not. But yeah, this is the best, I think this has best writing, best voice acting, and animation of the whole
first season. And it looks a lot more like the Simpsons episodes that would follow it, whereas everything else is kind of breaking rules they haven't yet set.
Well, because Brad Bird was supervising director for all the good years.
With the exception, is this the only time Krusty appears without white face makeup?
I think there were a couple others.
Which, by the way, I find white face makeup offensive.
those are my people.
Yes.
I think it might be the only time where this is pre... He's not actually wearing makeup, Krusty.
Yes.
He's actually that pale. So I don't think he was like that yellow, fleshy color anytime after this.
Yes.
Oh, boy, what happened in this episode?
Oh, that's right. Well, Krusty gets busted. Surprise, Krusty gets busted in this episode for armed robbery. And spoilers, it's actually Sideshow Bob. I'm sorry. You've had 25 years, I guess, to figure this out. But
I believe I have a clip that sets up the premise, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm home, everybody.
Goody gumdrop. You missed the whole slideshow, Homer.
Oh, fantastic. Marge, you're never going to believe what happened. I was down at the Quickie Mart, minding my own business when... Ooh, 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 the news!
Springfield, number one news team, with our Emmy Award-winning anchorman, Kent Brockman.
Good evening. I'm Scott Christian. Kent Brockman is off tonight. Why did the clown cross the road? To rob a Quickie Mart. The new story behind that enigmatic half joke right after this.
So why make that awesome joke and not have... They introduced a substitute anchor for Kent Brockman.
Well, this is from the commentary. They thought it would be a running joke, but it was so subtle nobody got it that it was supposed to be a thing of like, Kent Brockman with big time, like Kent Brockman in his deal says, my name has to be mentioned for every episode.
Okay.
But then he's not there. So you're told, Kent Brockman. I'm Scott Christian.
So he was never supposed to be seen. He's seen later in the episode.
Later in the episode. That's just a one-off joke. They did several other, they did it like three other times, I feel like, in the first couple seasons.
I was confused. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that was going to be a runner, but it turned out to not be that funny.
That's kind of why they dropped it. Yeah. It's just confusing. You're like, wait, why is Scott Christian here? You're not thinking they were too smart for their own good with that joke.
Mm-hmm. And someone taping and watching The Simpsons over and over again, I love that this is Kelsey Grammer's debut, but not Sideshow Bob's.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, you'll never get that feeling again when you hear Kelsey Grammer's voice come out of Sideshow Bob. It is not how you expected him to sound.
Yeah, that's that Kelsey Grammer doing Sideshow Bob was just supposed to be a one-off joke of like,
it's
shock
a fucking
he
institution
sounds this
now.
Way.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this clownish sidekick sounds like the most urbane person in the world. That's just a one-off joke, really. And then every later appearance, that's just who he is.
It's great for those writers to use all of their Harvard words, put them yeah. in his mouth. And it's funny, like, Sideshow Mello would come later as, like, an exaggeration of that idea.
Yeah.
Like, he's even more Shakespearean and theatrical and, like, erudite.
And that's just such a weird idea that Krusty only hires guys who are super erudite in there. Just, he's robbing the town!
He's got dignity!
He'd block out to the sun!
But I couldn't help but notice in the scene where the actual robbery takes place, I'm almost positive it's not Kelsey Grammer at all.
It's Kelsey, well...
It seems like Dan Castellaneta, and let's see if we can detect that.
Never have I seen you look so unhappy while purchasing such a large quantity of ice cream.
Well, the reason I look unhappy is that tonight I have to see a slideshow starring my wife's sisters. Or as I call them, the gruesome twosome.
The joke's so good to hear it.
Ow, my foot, you lousy, stupid
Sorry,
lousy.
Pal.
I honestly can't tell.
No, on the commentary, that is Kelsey.
That sounds like Kelsey doing a Krusty, a bad Krusty, well, but it's not supposed to be.
Well, he's thrown off by getting his foot stepped on, and it is such a simple mystery, by the way, but it worked for me as a kid. I didn't have it all add up, even though they shout the clues at you to make sure it's as obvious as possible.
It's funny how no one else picked up on this. I guess they were not portraying the police as that incompetent yet, but it seems like a very open and shut, like, where was Krusty's alibi? Like, what was Sideshow Bob doing? Like, there was none of this
is gone
over.
This is the start of the police being incompetent and, like, them... with things going on in police brutality now, like the scene of them crashing through Krusty's window, like, holding him down and putting a gun to his head.
Not even like a police gun, just like a huge like Colt revolver.
Yeah, that was scary. I was like, jeez.
And he has a very Lionel Hutz type lawyer, too. I feel like it would have been Lionel Hutz.
And then the other guy should have been Burns' lawyer, but it was like...
Yeah.
A guy who would later
who looks
be
like
a
Burke
judge,
Barlow.
I think.
What yeah, did that? He graduate to judge?
I guess, I don't know.
He's Judge Snyder, I think.
No, Judge
Snyder
was
is like
on the
Bork
bench
guy,
in this episode, too.
This is one of my favorite jokes
as man
a kid.
In the bag.
And now Krusty's lawyer when he's pronounced guilty.
Foreperson, have you reached a verdict?
Yes, we have, Your Honor. We find the defendant, Krusty the Clown, guilty.
This happens to me every time.
Yeah, I like that.
I feel like that was a Hank Azaria. Like, if he didn't make up that joke when recording, he at least, like, embellished it so well. Also, it's so weird in the first season, all these ones, to hear Nancy Cartwright doing a woman's voice, like, random woman voice. Because they just didn't have, like, Pamela.
Well, even weirder, you'll find, is Julie Kavner doing random women's voices.
Yeah, they really
yeah,
didn't
doesn't
do
have
that much.
Spot that a million miles away.
But Krusty had been on, he was a Tracy Ullman character, and and in previous episodes, I believe it was the one with the head.
Mm-hmm. Telltale Head.
In Telltale Head, Sideshow Bob is there.
Yeah.
So to be, like you said earlier, Chris, watching live as a kid, you know Sideshow Bob as a character.
Yeah.
As a regular character who will then later
but
be revealed
also
to
as
be something.
Kids our age who were taping and watching and kind of eating every single tiny nuance of the show. Like, I knew who Sideshow Bob was when I saw this episode.
And here's a quick note about the creation of Krusty and Radioactive Man.
Yeah.
In the original cartoons and the Tracy Ullman shorts,
sure.
Matt Groening imagined both of them as these guys look just like Homer, but Bart sees them as heroes when he has no respect for his father. And,
it's pretty clever visual,
like
subtle visual gag. Yeah.
And then Homer is, I think he even said at one point he was tooling around with the idea that Homer and Krusty were the same person.
Right.
So this episode already breaks that.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I love that. It's another thing that I think sort of dates the show, but not really, because this barely existed when I was a little kid. I'm a big animation nerd. And part of the reason why my generation was exposed to Bugs Bunny cartoons, mostly Popeye cartoons. The television airwaves wanted to show these cartoon shorts that were shown theatrically, but they were just short of runtime. So basically, these shows were created, usually hosted by a clown or a wacky person in makeup. Hey, kids! And then they throw to cartoons, and that's it's a format that literally is gone. I think Bozo is the last one to stick around, and he's dead.
Well, that's okay. So I think we said Brad Bird directed the Bird, and he loved Krusty, and it's also because Brad and Matt Groening grew up in the same area of Oregon, where there was a clown called Rusty Nails there. And he was the inspiration for Krusty, and he was the inspiration when Matt Groening was designing Krusty, and then Brad Bird noticed that when he came on the show. He's like, oh, I love Rusty Nails too. Let's go in there. But then you mix in with that Dan Castellaneta didn't know Rusty Nails, but he was from the Chicago area, so he knew Bozo. So it's a mix of Dan Castellaneta's Bozo when he grew up with Rusty Nails of Portland, Oregon.
And in terms of writing, I think he's really based on Johnny Carson. Like, just the washed-up showbiz guy who is just, like, he's so jaded by the industry. I think because Al Jean and Mike Reiss wrote for Johnny Carson, and didn't really like it.
Well, I've heard on other commentaries the writers say that Krusty is just their repository for all the showbiz jokes. They're deeply cynical showbiz jokes. Everyone they want to use.
Which is really funny.
We buried the Special
Thinking
Olympics.
Thinking of a fucking kids clown show host being elevated to that level of celebrity. But that's the thing about this episode is that Krusty doesn't portray that kind of character. Mm. He's actually kind of nice.
Relatively, yeah.
He doesn't have any of those Hollywood, like, get away from me, kid. Yeah. He has a heart attack. Once, but he is the foil of that joke.
He's kind of a shill, but he's not as, I guess, malevolent.
Yeah.
The most malevolent he is when Sideshow Bob is rubbing, like, he hits him with a pie and is, like, shoving it in his face.
That's true.
And then Krusty punches him back, like, just punches him in the face.
I have a clip from Krusty's show.
I forgot about that.
I love it.
Kids, who do you love?
Daddy!
How much do you love me? What would you do if I went off the air?
We kill ourselves!
So good.
Such a wonderfully dark
It's
joke.
Still great.
Though when they talk about the him representing pork products, that's one of those things like, well, you weren't planning on it being Jewish at this point. Yeah.
Well, they do. They
cover it that he like he avoids his Judaism.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Except that brilliant, the logo on his... That's for a later episode. Never mind.
Okay, I have a famous first in this episode.
That,
the first "Ay Caramba," I believe.
Really?
And it was delivered in an appropriate context. It was Patty and Selma showing off their trip to Mexico.
Yes.
And I believe the line was, this is your Aunt Patty taking a siesta. And Bart says, "Ay Caramba," and that would show up a billion times later.
You see her in a weird
later.
Bra.
Yeah, like a weird like cone bra.
Oh,
it's just
God,
the
it's
map,
so gross.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, first act.
Well, and then of course the other big first is that Apu is in this. This is the first.
Is this the first Apu?
I don't think it is.
They said it on the commentary.
Oh, really?
They said in the commentary it's the first Apu.
I have a story about this. That's a recent story from maybe a year ago. Mike Reiss actually talks about where the Apu voice came from.
Really?
They were at a table read, which is what happens before you figure anything else out. You sit down with the actors and you say your lines and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Apu didn't have a name even. It's just a Quickie Mart clerk. And in parentheses or whatever, as a stage direction, no stereotypical Indian voice.
Really?
And that's the first thing Hank Azaria did, and the entire table just started cracking up. So that's what stuck. That's how Apu became a character, because he did what he wasn't supposed to do, and everyone laughed.
That's
how it happened.
Well, and that has come up a lot recently.
And when he was named in a tribute to the Apu trilogy by Sajid Ray, which was it's one of the most famous... internationally famous films.
Not
that come out
famous
of
enough.
The Apu trilogy. Were you a film major? Or did you?
A minor. So, all right. Thanks for calling me up.
Then you really should have learned that.
No,
stuff.
I've never heard of them.
You too busy watching 400 Blows?
Yeah.
Scrub.
Apu is, on the commentaries, they also mentioned that they think the source of Apu came from Sam Simon, because apparently at the time, Sam Simon would go to 7-Eleven. They said he'd go to 7-Eleven more than anybody on the staff, and that he was just addicted to 7-Eleven.
Shitty hot dogs and chips and nachos.
Which is weird, because he's a
hardcore
mega vegetarian. Yeah,
was a mega vegan.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Right now, he's just vegetables.
Now they're all dead. Stop. That's a great... That's one of my favorite Krusty lines. Like, what happened to all those critics? They're all dead. How's it going? Hot enough for you, boys?
I did read a throwaway line that James Earl Jones was originally cast
as
Sideshow
Bob. That's what they
said,
that he was...
Really? Well, I mean, he was a voice in the next season, correct?
Yeah, the Raven. The next two Halloween episodes.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he was... But that to imagine it as anybody but Kelsey Grammer is just impossible.
And
now.
Does this predate Frasier? Frasier?
No.
The show Frasier.
Yeah, not the character.
The character Frasier. And that this was one of the funniest bits on the commentaries. That it was written by Jay Kogan and Wally Walidarsky, who left after season 3. Their last episode was Last Exit to Springfield, which a lot of people call the best one ever. But they went on to just write at a bunch of different places, including Frasier. And Jay Kogan has this funny bit on the commentary saying, what's the difference between writing Frasier and Sideshow Bob? Nothing. They are the same character.
They're just as evil.
They are just... And maybe Kelsey Grammer is just as evil, too.
Cousin Merle, really?
Really? Well, I mean, you saw that stuff about Kelsey Grammer on the Real Housewives show, right?
That he's a real turd.
He's a real turd.
I did notice a couple weird animation things in this episode. Like, it's... Homer's pupils do a weird thing during the robbery.
Yeah.
And how artfully... Krusty's heart attack and Sideshow Bob reading are there. It seems like more animation.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely like
I'm going to tell you right now. The heart attack. So this is something I found out from listening to a lot of Brad Bird commentary, is that up until he went to 3D animation, because he just couldn't do it himself, in 2D animation, he always picked at least one scene in anything he did and animated it all himself. 100% him. In this case, the heart attack was all him.
Okay.
He said when he was at the recording for Dan Castellaneta saying, glistening, grumpy, just this whole heart attack thing, it made him laugh so much. He said he had to animate something just as good. And just the way his body deflates and his head jerks forward.
I hate saying this. This is going to be a terrible sentence. It is like the most animation I've seen in the sense.
Well, and also
so much animation.
On the commentary, Brad Bird points out that there's some very simple scenes in the episode, and he says that buys you the extra good scenes you see later.
He's referring to everything in the courtroom.
I also think when Bob goes, they were smart enough to even catch me. Like his acting on that is so big and like stagey. I love that.
No, he's reading quietly and he's more animated than any character on the show.
Kids are people too. That's smarter than you think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was David Silverman doing stuff on this episode too.
I mean,
he was around.
Yeah, I mean, David Silverman had probably set the stage for Krusty a lot and other stuff, so I would think Brad Bird got there. And also, here's another Brad Bird thing.
What's that?
Did you guys catch the A113 reference?
I did not. Where was it?
Yeah. Was that his number on
Krusty's number? Yep, that was Krusty's prisoner number that he says, it's A113, which, in case you don't know,
it's a reference to the hot sauce.
The CalArts classroom. Yeah. That Brad Bird, John Lasseter, and
it's in every Pixar film.
Yeah, they put in every Pixar film. That's why he went to Pixar. Lasseter was saying, like, we finally got Brad Bird in Pixar. He'd been working on Simpsons this whole time. We wanted him in Pixar.
And he's finally making Tomorrowland, which you assholes didn't appreciate. See Tomorrowland.
On DVD now? It's probably out of theaters.
The one thing I like about this episode is the fact that this show is good for children and they seem to like it.
Yeah.
And yes. I don't know what they're trying to say there, but Krusty not being able to make the show anymore is nothing but good for the world.
Yep.
And restoring him to that position is what happens at the end of the episode, making TV worse ultimately for children, which it doesn't end well in the long run.
Does anybody remember the name of Sideshow Bob's show?
Cavalcade of Whimsy.
Bob Mackey, that is correct.
I
wrote it down just because I wanted to remember.
Because I use the word cavalcade a lot now.
It's flashed so quickly, Cavalcade of Whimsy.
Oh, that's so great. Well, and as a kid, I had no idea who Cole Porter was, but I love that song.
It's
Every
great.
Every time we say goodbye. Just getting to hear Kelsey Grammer sing, his voice, I mean... That they would use his singing so much more in later appearances, but this was the first time.
And they just played that joke. I mean, there wasn't even a joke. He just sang a song for 25 seconds.
Yeah, just like this. At the end of every episode, I say goodbye with my friend Cole Porter, and he just sits next to his pianist that he just
the weirdest animation thing I noticed. Chief Wiggum is a slightly different shade than everybody.
He's darker.
His hair is the wrong color.
He's tan or something.
He's
and he has
tan.
Black hair.
Yeah, he had black hair for a while.
Can't tell if he's supposed to be.
But it's his skin tone. Everybody in The Simpsons is either yellow or they're not, other than Wendell. But, you know, who cares
about
him?
We don't talk about Wendell.
But I did capture a clip of Wiggum scene with Homer because I thought it was really funny.
Mm-hmm. Ready, Mr. Simpson?
Yes, sir.
Send in the clowns. So, Simpson, which one is it?
Well, if the crime is making me laugh, they're all guilty.
No, which one is the robber?
Oh, definitely number...
Simpson!
Four.
That's great.
But also, like, man, did Wiggum seem almost competent?
He was trying to get his job done.
Yeah. Well, though, by the end of the episode, that is the first scene of, like, police incompetence where... Eddie or Lou says, hey, what do we think of that? Get your duffs, get off your duffs and get over there. And, yeah, I also... Okay, but I do have some dead people from this episode.
Oh, let me get my dead clip up. Sorry about that.
Death stalks you at every turn. Ah, there it is, death.
You can also put this in the level of in the section of jokes I did not get as a child, which was the Springfield Review of Books magazine when Bart says, like, well, he wouldn't read that. You don't need to read to appreciate the Springfield Review of Books. Look at these drawings of the Gore Vidal and Susan Sontag.
Dead.
And Bart's reaction to it was like, yeah, says, I guess you could. Like,
that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Like, as a kid, I had no clue who other these people were. I probably wouldn't know for like 10 more years.
I didn't know until college, really, yeah.
I only found out who Gore Vidal was from watching that Celluloid Closet documentary when I was 17 and him talking about how proud he was that he tricked Charlton Heston into playing a gay man.
I only know him from the biggest books in my parents' library. Jesus.
Well, there was that one joke. Like, no, Lisa, boys kiss girls.
Oh, yeah. That's a lady, yeah. Gore Vidal.
Is that a Gore Vidal book?
Yeah, she says, the only person who can understand me is Gore Vidal, and he's kissed more boys than I have. Girls, Lisa, boys kiss girls.
Who names their child Gore?
Man.
Seems pretty cruel.
Gore Vidal, I mean, I don't know.
Like, here's my kid, brutal Antista.
Maybe it's like Goresmith or like Gordon. It could be Gordon.
Bloody Gilbert.
I love the, I did love that little throwaway gag of Apu holding the, like, Magnum on the cover of a gun magazine, the clown stopper.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's such a good little joke. And that Apu is jumpy the whole, when they come back to his story, it's like, hey, what are you doing? Like, oh, get out of here, or get your stuff and then leave. I don't trust anybody now.
Yeah.
Also, Homer...
if I may, I am giving line of the show to Apu.
That's the joke.
For this one, I love it so much.
Hand over all your money in a paper bag.
Yes, yes, I know that procedure for armed robbery. I do work in a convenience store, you know. You can emerge now from my chips. The opportunity to prove yourself a hero is long gone.
I completely forgot that joke, and when I heard it today, I laughed so hard.
I think that
was my line of the show, too.
I think it's why I get so bummed when the conversation came up around the tokenism of Apu. I'm like, well, because technically you're right. But he's those are such great lines that I don't want
to
take
well,
this
he's allowed to be
a character
in this scene. He's not just a different person, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So he's been given so much history, like even 8 years later.
He's got kids and family and a wife to cheat on.
Well, and he has, and the stuff about him going to college and stuff about his citizenship test.
Yeah.
All those things, That's a conversation for another day.
Yeah, it's not one of those things that's up to me to decide, but like, man, Apu is great.
Dan Castellaneta is the voice MVP of this episode, though. His Krusty, and he has scenes between Krusty and Homer that you, as a kid, I had no idea they were the same person in a lot of those cases. Same with Burns and Smithers.
Yeah, not at all.
But the bits about him being illiterate,
I have that clip. Okay.
What's the matter? Can't you read?
No, I can't. I can't read or write. I admit it. I'm totally illiterate. Now, are you happy?
Can it be that the champion of child literacy can't even read himself?
Isn't it a crime to be illiterate?
All right, all right. See this, Krusty? This is a B, and this is Exhibit B. Betting slips obtained by this court indicating you have lost substantial sums of money on sports gambling.
Is it a crime to bet on sporting events?
Yes, it is.
Man, you know what? It's just so great to hear Harry Shearer trying.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Like, he is giving it everything in this scene.
Yeah, I bet he was actually coming into a studio and everything.
Oh, is it a crime to bet on sporting events? I love that line so much. On the commentaries, they reveal that that's because the writers bet on sports all the time. They have... This was their inspiration for the later Lisa's being great at betting on football. They would have a Super Bowl pool every year, and they are all gambling.
Is that a Mosoff? Is that actually illegal? I don't know from sports.
I mean, technically, sure. No idea. It's one of those little crimes that if you're privileged enough, nothing will happen to you. But
yeah.
But I think those betting slips were more from like sports books and stuff than actual like big time illegal things. Not an office pool.
Yeah, they didn't go into it really.
Here's another thing in that Quickie Mart scene. Mm-hmm. They talk about triple chocolate. Mm-hmm. That was a joke, and I swear within two years.
Oh, that was a joke.
There was triple chocolate.
I feel like I see that all the time now.
I didn't realize, man.
They just stole it from that. And also, Brad Bird talked about on the commentaries this interesting bit that. They had assistant directors from every season after one, but they like you were the sole director on your episode if it was yours. And so him doing that and being supervising director of the entire rest of the season said doing this episode just about killed him. But he loved the script so much he felt he had to do it.
Well, I think we all agree it's the best one of season one, I think. Probably.
Best anime.
I think I have personal favorites, but like it, you could air if you're watching it on a rerun, it could air in the middle of the second or third or fifth season, and you might not notice. Mm-hmm. I mean, outside of a couple of animation, it's in line with the show's tone everywhere else.
Yeah, I think I would turn off a Homer's Odyssey or a Call of the Simpsons maybe, but I would leave this one. Huh?
It's awesome to be rewatching these episodes because I definitely ignored them. I didn't bring the first season DVD set out here to San Francisco. Mm. I left it in Florida and brought seasons 2 through 7.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did you guys notice in the credits that it showed? It actually credited Sam Simon as the writer of the Itchy and Scratchy theme.
Really? No.
Yeah, they went to the trouble of showing Itchy and Scratchy theme written by Sam Simon.
I was
going to
say,
the credits.
Sorry.
And it credited the Cole Porter song used, too.
I saw that, yeah. It was this the first Itchy and Scratchy with, like, a title card? And,
theme?
It was, like, not an interesting, like...
They were still
episode,
again.
But,
they were still finding their way.
Yeah,
because I know eventually in the later five seasons, like I want to count how many episodes of The Simpsons are opened up with Itchy and Scratchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a good way to set the theme. Yeah. It's just like here's what this one's about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Now that's
how the movie opens.
A couple other things that seem so pressing here. Like, one, Reverend Lovejoy seemed so off character, just like burn everything.
I had that listed as dated references. One. Pacemakers, do they still exist and do microwaves interfere with them?
I'm sure they do exist,
do Christians still burn things they don't like? The last time I remember that happening was the Dixie Chicks album.
Well, but it definitely
we were at war and they had no right to speak like that.
But it definitely the idea of a beloved celebrity being caught in a crime and then everybody destroys their stuff or it ruins their legacy.
Oh, Tumblr, you're right.
That's still very real.
Yes.
But that their crime would if somebody, let's say Shia LaBeouf, Shia LaBeouf committed armed robbery but didn't hurt anybody, at least, I think we just laugh at it. Like, we wouldn't go like, or, I don't know, say Michael Jordan. If Michael Jordan committed armed robbery, would we get that upset about it?
It is amazing how much society is willing to forgive over a funny meme. And Shia LaBeouf now skate free again.
This was pre Pee-wee Herman scandal, too. So
you're right.
Did it predict that? I feel like people were burning Pee-wee stuff or like getting rid of it or making a big display of like this prevert.
Yeah,
I definitely think so.
We were talking about that in regards to Death to Smoochie, which is a movie I hate, but I loved. But that there was a turning point when everybody thought it was hilarious to turn every kid show host into a deeply evil person with a very hilarious.
It's so the opposite of what you'd expect.
And like,
I don't think
that was happening yet. And I do think you're right. Pee-wee Herman was kind of like, well, now anything's possible. Yeah. We're kid show hosts.
And lastly, the other joke that felt oddly pressing to me was that when after they free Krusty, which by the way, like to get somebody out of jail after they find the right guy, like that doesn't happen overnight.
West Memphis 3.
And then also that Sideshow Bob just, even though Bart caught him in setting up their entire relationship from then on, He didn't have to confess, but he immediately confesses. He's
on the show.
Well, no, not only on the show. He's handcuffed behind his back and he's being let out. Right. Like, yes, I did it. I had to get Krusty. And to the point where it was so stilted, he just says the Scooby-Doo line.
Yeah.
But then when the cops say to Krusty, we're sorry and never happen again.
Never happen again.
I like that, though.
And Krusty goes, it better not.
Yeah, it better not. Then also Homer does a very light prison rape joke, too.
Hope
all those things I've heard about prison aren't true. I think that's kind of it. I really loved this episode.
Apu is our winner of line of the show.
And it's so, yeah, Brad Bird, you know, we had no clue who Brad Bird was then.
Oh, this is supposed to be the finale of the show.
It would have been the finale.
Which is why I think people were so behind it. It was supposed to close out the season.
Mm-hmm. And so they've gotten better and better as they go. Like, this is the culmination
of a whole season
of work.
Instead with another show.
The worst, or have been the first episode and had to be massively fixed. I can't wait to do that episode.
Yeah.
It's a weird one.
Some Enchanted Evening is the one we're
talking. And we will
about.
Do it. And thank you very much to Patreon donators.
Yeah, thanks so much for supporting the show. Mm-hmm. Should we wrap up then?
Yeah, I didn't want to tell everybody, too. I support all this. But if you want us to do more, this is the third of our three pilot episodes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just tell your friends. Tell everybody about you want to be a patron, too, to listen to these. Because I've really enjoyed doing these. I want to
really
do more.
Really
want
to do more.
And like The Simpsons, they'll only get better. Our voices will become different and better.
We'll finally figure ourselves out.
Finally get our frosty chocolate milkshakes.
But then we'll get too into one type of joke and overdo it. And
yeah, it'll all go downhill in 20 years. But until then, please check us out. And let's do some plugs, Chris.
Yeah, Laser Time, thank you very much to Patreon donors. It's hard to plug things when you guys have basically paid up front.
Yeah, but seriously, follow me on Twitter, HENEREYG. And also follow Simpsons Quotes and Simpsons Screen on Twitter.
Simpsons IG on Instagram is following that is the best thing I've ever done. It's just three Simpsons short clips a week.
Well, the Simpsons Screen one I love because every 30 minutes it tweets a random screen from the Simpsons, sometimes in between frames. It's just hideous stuff. It's great.
Yeah, I like that unless they retweet a frame from like a Kazaa video I downloaded in college 14 years ago.
That is
just
true.
Like real player format, frame grab.
Because it's just taking it from some other resource, right?
I don't know where it's. I mean, I'm sure. I don't know where it is. It's an underground bunker somewhere full of Simpsons screenshots, maybe. As for me, I am Bob Servo on Twitter. You can read my stuff out at US Gamer and Something Awful. And I have my own podcast called Retronauts. It's a classic gaming podcast every week. We are also Patreon supported, but I'll let you look that up for yourself. So go to Retronauts.com to find the podcast. And that's it for Talking Simpsons for this week. Remember, folks, every time we say goodbye, I die just a little.